Hello, pals of mine. I'm Julie Parker, and this is Conversation Accessories. Well, we're into a new decade, and right out of the gate, people are saying, it's another Roaring Twenties. Stop with the reboots. Besides, you can't call a decade anything until it has ended. Hopefully, it will end on a more positive note than it has begun. Now, if you need positive notes in your life, spend some time on the Mendocino Coast. It is gorgeous here. As if the ocean views aren't enough, when our flowers bloom, especially the rhododendrons, which are abundant, it is breathtaking. You just have to stop and absorb. Brad Williams enjoys the rhododendrons, but his passion leads towards flowering plants of the carnivorous kind, which happens to flourish on the Northern California coast. So let's get the obvious carnivorous plant out of the way first. The Venus flytrap that everybody knows because the jaws of death, it's such a strong visual. What do you think most people don't know about them?
I think most people don't know is that they're actually quite easy to grow, because I think everyone's experience with them is getting the little Venus flytrap at Home Depot or a nursery, and you keep it for a few weeks and it dies. And I think that's everyone's experience with a carnivorous plant. And the thing is that, you know, the instructions that come with them are like completely wrong. They're not house plants. They're not indoor plants. They're perennials, just like a tulip or a daffodil. So if you grow them, you know, outdoors in full sun, you let them, you know, freeze and die back in the winter and come back in spring, you know, they grow that way and they'll do really well. And they do, you know, have some differences than a normal plant. You know, they're bog plants. They need to be wet all the time and they need really clean water. They can't have like chlorinated water or city water. There's different variations of fly traps. There's different cultivars. There's red fly traps. There's giant forms of fly traps.
Now we say giant form, like how big are we talking?
Well, I mean, we're not talking Audrey 2 size. Maybe in a few years they'll get it. But, you know, a typical wild fly trap, the traps maybe about half an inch in size, but, you know, they've gotten cultivars now where the traps are about 2 inches, which is, you know, a pretty big trap. And then they have traps that are just really crazy looking with like frilly edges, and they have some fly traps that the traps are so warped they don't even close anymore. They can't even catch insects anymore, but they're still really crazy looking cool plants. And I think the trapping mechanism is really interesting too, that they have like the little trigger hairs. The trigger hair is on the pad of the trap, and it actually, you have to trigger the hairs twice in order to make the trap close, in case, you know, it doesn't want to get, use all that energy closing if a raindrop or a leaf hits it. So a bug has to crawl around on the leaf a little bit in order to trigger the hairs. So if it triggers one hair, it sets off like a little timer, and it takes about 5 seconds, a 5 second period that the fly has to trigger another hair, and then the trap will close. So it's actually a really complex trapping mechanism. So, you
know, a backup system.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen photos where someone is actually holding a fly, say, and manually feeding. Does that actually happen?
Yeah. You can, but you have to kind of move it back and forth a little bit to trigger the two trigger hairs. But yeah, you can definitely do that.
So do you have just a fly catcher, a no pest strip to get a food supply for the plants?
You don't have to feed them. They still get most of their energy through photosynthesis. The flies are kind of like the fertilizer. So the reason they catch flies is they live in really nutrient poor soil. So it's kind of like the phosphorus. You know, most plants need phosphorus to grow. and that's what the fly is providing. So they can live without flies. They just grow better with them. So I don't feed my fly traps. They do catch their own sometimes.
Just kind of a funny visual.
Yeah. You know, I have reptiles too, so there's been some times where I've had some extra crickets and I've gone through and fed them just to give them a little boost. But
So what reptiles do you have?
I have three monitor lizards, three snakes, red-tailed boa, reticulated python, a scaleless rat snake, and a bearded dragon.
Of course you do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
As one does.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thing. So I'm trying to visualize what your home looks like. We're doing this interview in a structure where he actually grows the plants inside and out. So what does your home actually look like? How do you have these animals, your apartment complex inside your actual home for all the reptiles?
Actually, most of the reptiles are here at the nursery.
What? They're here?
Yeah, they're here. There's my two monitor lizards are in this room over
Okay.
here. I have my snakes
Yeah, I can
in
handle
the
lizards,
pet
but
room.
snakes, I'm glad I didn't know that when I came here.
I can take them out if you'd like
No,
if
I'm
you can
just out of sight. I don't
pet
see them, so it's okay.
them.
Man.
But I do at the house. We have a bedroom. We have an extra bedroom where my 5-foot monitor lizard lives. And
5-foot lizard.
she sleeps in bed with me every night. And she's my
Okay.
little baby.
All right.
Yep.
People love fur babies. Why
Yeah.
not scaly
Yeah.
skin?
And my wife won't allow any plants at that house due to my bringing them in our old house and potting them. So.
That's enough.
She forbids me from bringing work home anymore. So yeah,
I
personal.
understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you clearly have an interest in the quirky side of life, not mainstream, let's say. Yeah. So when you were a child, what kind of pets did you have?
Lizards and snakes. My first pet was an iguana when I was 8 years old, and I wanted one forever. And it hated my guts, and it grew huge, and it whipped me with its tail, and it bit me, and I loved it. But I eventually had to get rid of it because it bit me really bad one time, and my parents said, "That's enough."
So do iguanas, lizards, do they relate just like
No.
domestic pets?
No,
So why do
they
you think
hate.
it didn't care for you in particular?
No, it hated everyone.
Just generally. Okay. Just came in with a bad tude.
But I was the only one that tried to cuddle it and love it. So it bit me because.
You know there's a song, a novelty song, where the woman tries to save the snake. Do you know what I'm
No,
talking about?
I did not.
She takes it in, oh, you poor thing, warms it up, and of course the inevitable happens. And I'm like,
Yeah,
how could you? I saved you. I'm a snake. I'm a snake.
that's reptiles.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
So how did that segue into carnivorous plants?
Don't know. I guess
Okay.
that they were just something odd. I just always thought they were beautiful and cool, and I don't. I'd grown them my whole life, but it wasn't until Fort Bragg or I moved here and I grew them. I started growing them seriously because my whole life I had lived in studio apartments and didn't really live in the same place for more than a year. And then when my wife and I moved here, we actually had land. And so that was the first thing I did was buy a bunch of carnivorous plants. And then I decided I was going to start a nursery and I had no idea what I was doing, but I eventually figured it out somewhat.
Learn as you go.
And learn as I went, yeah.
Like
And
life.
yeah, exactly.
So I'm curious, are you a comic book fan? Like I can see you.
I'm not, but I love cartoons, and I wanted to be a cartoonist for a long time.
Really?
Yeah, and actually, all my tattoos are my favorite cartoons. Like I have a tattoo of
Which are?
Ren and Stimpy. Beavis and Butthead, The Simpsons, Rocco's Modern Life.
See, they're all a little darker side of comics. See, that was my point. I could see you.
Darker sense of humor. I have a very, very morbid, dark sense of humor.
Which can be healthy, actually.
Yeah, I think so.
To shy away from life. How many different types of strains are you growing here?
What I grow are 90, about 90% Sarracenia, which are the North American pitcher plants, which are, the ones that are just like the big tubes. I'm making like hand motions, which really translates well on the podcast. There are eight species of those, but they all hybridize with each other, and there's a lot of varieties within the species. So there's thousands of varieties and hybrids and different colors and shapes of those. And they are the easiest to grow, like in a garden outdoor situation. So for someone just getting into carnivorous plants, I think they're the best option. They're, something you can keep outside. They grow in most climates pretty well. So that's why I mostly grow the Sarracenia. I also grow sundews, which are the ones with the sticky leaves. And I grow a few butterworts. They kind of look like little succulents that have sticky leaves that catch gnats and things. And I grow a few cephalotis, which are like little miniature pitcher plants from Australia. And then I just started growing a few Nepenthes that are like tropical pitcher plants that have the leaves and they have pitchers that hang down. Some people call them monkey cups because they hold water and I guess monkeys can drink from them if they
Oh,
want.
that's cool.
Yeah.
Can tropical plants grow here on the North Coast, where it's not tropical
It's
at all?
not outdoor. No, they can grow in a windowsill or in a greenhouse, but not outdoors.
So in a regular windowsell, as long as it's, you don't
Certain
need a.
types, the types I grow can grow in a windowsill, but you have to mist them if you want them to grow
Oh, the
pitchers. So
humidity.
yeah, they need a
Okay.
lot of humidity. But yeah.
Educating myself, that's why I do the podcast. Always
Yeah,
learning.
that's good.
Now, you do sell some plants, so I'm curious which ones do you get the most requests for?
Well, mostly the Sarracenia because that's what I grow most of. But I guess Sarracenia purpurea is the one that like a lot of beginners like. But I have so many varieties of Sarracenia. I get a lot of requests for those. Oh, I also grow Darlingtonia. I forgot about those. Those are called cobra lilies, and those are actually native to Northern California. Not here, more north than us, but they're really cool. They have really bulbous heads and snake tongues. And I get a lot of requests for those because they're really hard to grow in other climates. They actually, Fort Bragg is one of the few climates they do really well. So,
Interesting.
yeah, I'm able to grow them without much trouble where other people have to like have water cooling systems and all this fancy stuff to grow them. So I get a lot of requests for those.
And those are outdoor as well.
Yeah, those are outdoor. Yeah.
Now you mentioned water, so just sitting water after a rain like it is today, that's fine. It's just not the tap water is what you're saying that you don't want to give them.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm on a well, and my well water's fine for them. The thing is, it's like really pure water. Like they don't like a high mineral content water because they grow in such nutrient poor environment that anything with like a lot of nutrients is bad for them. So I guess, around here locally, our well water is fine for them, but I think in places with like really hard water, I don't think the well water is good for them. Which I thought our water would be hard, but I guess it isn't, or it isn't hard enough to be bad for the plants anyway.
I understand that some of your plants are on display at the Mendocino Coast Botanical Gardens. That's pretty cool.
I was really happy to do that. And
How do you begin to select which ones to display?
They said they wanted big ones, so I just picked my biggest
Okay.
ones. Yeah. Obviously, ones that I had extra of, and that's about it.
So they didn't have a special request. They just let you decide.
Yeah, they just let me decide.
When did you install them over there?
Just a couple months ago
Also fairly
now.
recent then.
Yeah, very recently.
Have they given you any feedback from visitors or staff for that matter?
The staff loved them. So far they've said the visitors loved them, but I put them in right when they were going dormant. So, they die back in winter. So really, I kind of put them in at the worst time for viewing them. Like some of them looked good and they were still happy with them, but I'm like, they'll look a lot better in spring and next year. I'm really waiting for them to come up in spring
Well, it's kind of funny
and
actually because you like the darker sides. That kind of makes sense that you
get
install it as they're dying.
I didn't pick the time to install them. They did.
It's just so you, Brad.
Exactly.
So you have a nursery now and you have a business going. How do you go about starting a carnivorous plant business? I realize it's like a nursery generally,
Yeah.
but it's a very specific niche.
Yeah, it is. I would say do take everything I did and then do the opposite of that. And then you would have a good carnivorous plant business. Yeah, it's something like, if you want to start a nursery, like a regular nursery, well, there's wholesalers. You just wholesale a bunch of plants and then you sell them retail. But with carnivorous plants, there's really not wholesalers. Like there's one wholesaler that sells fly traps and couple sundews, but I mean they're always on back order, and you can't make a whole nursery just selling one specific type of fly trap. So you really have to collect for a long time. So what I did was I said, I'm just going to start collecting as much as I can, and I'm not going to sell anything for 5 years. I'm just going to collect and grow. So obviously, I was working my other jobs and just putting all my money into collecting and growing out my plants.
So what other gigs did you have going?
I worked at Denny's and yeah, I just worked at restaurants. But I also inherited money too from my
That helps.
grandparents, so I definitely wouldn't have a nursery if I didn't inherit money.
It's a
So
sad way of getting it, but it does help.
yeah. So sorry, people that didn't inherit money. But eventually I think I'd get there, just a lot slower. But I also got very lucky in another way that someone actually sold. After about 5 years, I had collected maybe 10,000 or so plants, and I'd been growing them out. I'd been getting divisions. I had found, a lot of people, selling in bulk. I'd found some people trying to get rid of their collections. So, I found a lot of good deals, and that's pretty much what I did, was just scoured around for good deals and stuff. I eventually found one person that was selling her whole nursery. At the time, I didn't realize how many she was selling. Originally, she said she was selling 10,000 plants, and I said, "Well, I'm just one person. I don't think I can handle that many plants." And so she said, "Well, we recounted. It's really more like 2,500 plants." And I'm like, "Okay, I can handle that." And so she was up in Washington. We rented a U-Haul, went up to Washington to pick them up, and it was 10,000
It
plants.
was 10,000, yeah.
Yeah, and but she sold them to me for really cheap because she used to be a nursery and she was just trying to retire, and her husband was in an accident, unfortunately, and so they had to really get rid of them. But I was really lucky there, and that I ended up getting an entire nursery pretty much for really cheap. But at the same time, it took me about 2 years to repot and organize all those plants because they were so overgrown and needed so much maintenance. That's why my house turned into a potting house, because I was just 12 hours a day repotting plants for about a year and a half, repotting them. And I'm still organizing them. At least I'm selling them now, but I'm selling as I'm still trying to organize all those plants and still repotting my original plants that I had from that.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's a whole lot of work.
Well, speaking of working, so could you explain how these plants actually break down bugs, insects? I'm guessing that the different species break them down
Yeah, different
differently, but.
species, and mostly they just have enzymes and bacteria. I don't know the whole science of it because it gets really complex, and I've seen a few lectures on it by scientists, and it was way over my head.
Gotcha.
So,
Well, I saw something I was watching. I kind of did a cursory look online, and one of them just kind of like gets it down to mush. Like it does some kind of a weird, it's kind of gross looking.
yes, that's pretty much it. The Darlingtonia actually have maggots in them. They have a beneficial relationship with the maggots that live inside the traps that help break them down. And
Interesting.
yeah,
In-house.
in-house, yes.
What misconceptions do people have about carnivorous plants?
Mainly that they're hard to grow. Like I said, they're different to grow, but once you get the hang of it, they're easy. A lot of people say, oh, I can't grow this because I live in a hot climate. Like, no, they do fine in a hot climate. But one thing I get a lot is people think they'll control your insect population, and like, no, they won't. Sorry.
It's not like a mouser.
Yeah, they'll probably attract more bugs than they'll repel because they want to bring in bugs to eat, so they do that. A lot of people think they stink or they smell like rotting flesh.
Hadn't even thought about that. That's funny.
Well, there's the corpse flower that smells like
Oh,
rotting
yeah, that
flesh,
one.
and yeah, and people always think the corpse flower is carnivorous, or that the carnivorous plants are the corpse flower. Like, no, those aren't related in any way. Sometimes carnivorous plants, they do emit a smell. It's kind of a sickly sweet smell. It's definitely not a good smell, but it's not like horrendous, it's not going to drive you out of your garden. And I never smell it like other people. We put them in bouquets all the time though, and no one's ever complained. So, I think if you wash the bugs out, that's the main thing that happens is, dead bugs build up in there, and that smells.
Okay, that
And
makes
then,
sense.
yeah, and then, that attracts other bugs to the smell. So that's kind of part of their method of catching more bugs. I'm sure I'll think of many more later.
One succinct sentence, the best part of collecting carnivorous plants, what you enjoy the most.
Always new and interesting things to learn. I mean, you're never gonna collect everything, and I think the carnivorous plant community is really awesome. There's a lot of really cool people in the community. Everyone's always really supportive. When I was buying from people saying I was gonna start a nursery, everyone was super supportive. Instead of being like, you have no clue what you're doing, they were like, go for it, good job. And they really helped me along the way. I think they're really beautiful plants, and I just love looking over my collection and seeing how beautiful it is.
People appreciate when someone is not mainstream, that they're not doing the same thing everybody else is. That's always to be applauded, so good job, sir.
Oh, thank you very much.
Do something different. Do what makes you happy.